Okay, so yeah, a few questions there. I think I should go through just a few things, just to clear up a few questions we've had. Okay, so yeah, basically, the first thing you have to understand is that there's a thing called called the theory of effort, which is the same as like counting the ordinal numbers. It's how we count the ordinal numbers. And with the theory of effort, what happens is that as we move through let's say an option, let's say we have a switch or two switches, we can throw the switch. Yeah, so we throw the switch and we say that's one effort, and then the switch reaches now a new position in space. Yeah, and so what happens is then we can say, well, what can happen at the next step? Well, we can say, well, options are we can throw the other switch, or we can, you know, and then they'll both end up at the top, or we can throw the switch back down again and it'll end up at the bottom. So what we do is we start to calculate, well, what happens as we start to do this, and we just see how far we can get. So let's now, taking that concept, so we had the E0, which was the beginning state, if you like, which was infinity, yeah? So we've started with like an infinite something, yeah? And then we went to E1, we divided that thing, we applied the concept of the first step, and the division, we're at E1, and that gave us the ratio of cardinals to ordinals as being infinity 2 for the cardinals, and infinity minus 2, because we didn't have the two zero steps that are in the cardinals, so that's minus 2 off the infinite set for the ordinals, which it then offsets them and creates the uniform direction of time-space. Yep. So we've got that sort of idea. Now we're going to move in, we're going to say, well, what happens when we make the next step? So suddenly what can happen is we can apply mathematics, can't we? We can apply, we can do a division again, plus and minus, we can move up and down the plus and minus line, or we can do, you know, the square rooting, which is what we said. So what we need to do is then we need to prompt the calculations for E2 for each one of these functions, so that we can understand how the what structure we're looking at, you know, once this thing happens, because simultaneous calculation allows us to do that. We don't have to just take one direction, yeah, with the calculation. We can take all of the possible directions and see where that leads us. And as we're starting at such a simple point in numerical space, that seems to be fairly easy, yeah, because we've only got three options. There's actually, you know, the multiplication, which in this case would be squaring, because everything's in balance. We've got the square rooting, which is in balance again, and we've got the idea of plus and minus, which puts things, if you like, out of balance, you know, if you plus and minus. But that will actually lead to a collapse of the zero wave, as we said, yeah. So let's just go through that and see exactly how that works with the idea of plus and. Let's just go through. So here we are. We're going to move to E2, and we know that our infinite density, and we can write that down as on the cardinal side, infinity 2, ordinal side, infinity now will become minus 3, because we've moved another step. That's right, yeah. So 1, 2, yeah. So we removed another number, if you like, yeah, because we removed 2 from the E1 step, yeah, so that brought that into balance. But as far as the cardinals are concerned, it's 2, because there's no 0. And then when we move to the E2, that means we get a plus 1, don't we, here, which is 3. So minus 3, infinity minus 3 now. So at the initial stages, before a mathematical process has incurred, yeah, in other words, let's say we did a calculation without any mathematical process, we know that that's where infinity 2 and infinity minus 3 still remain. Now what we need to do is have a look at that and compare that to what happens when we apply the mathematical process. Okay, so what happens when we apply plus and minus, yeah, as a function? It's a function. You can either plus something or minus something, yeah? So, if we think about then what we're really doing with simultaneous equation is actually we're plus and minusing something simultaneously, because it's a plus and minus zero. It's not a one. And that brings it and that collapses it back to the zero point. So let's see how that works. As you can see, if we say like you can plus one and minus one on the other side, remember our infinite line, it expands, yeah? And if on the negative side we plus one and on the positive side we minus one, it collapses and we get the number we're looking for in the cardinals, yeah? And if we do the same within the zero space, if you like, we're going to do something simultaneous. We're going to collapse both of those ones back. So infinity 2 will suddenly be once again, it will revert back to the zero, if you think about it, because, you know, it reverts back to zero. And we have there, basically, the two infinity, yeah? Well, to get back to the infinite state that we started with, we're going to need to plus two to it, so it becomes plus two, isn't it, yeah? So we're going to need to times by two to get back to the infinite state of zero. So therefore, we can say, look, here we have times two, yeah, is just the function on one side, and plus two is just the function on the other side. That will collapse the zero at E2, yeah? Obviously, we're reversing time in a sense, aren't we? Yeah, think about it. Here we are at E1, and we know that the first step generated that, and we want to go back. Well, then we need to just divide by two, don't we, yeah? We need to divide that, times that by two, sorry. The cardinals need to be times by two, take it back to infinity. And the, if we plus the time function back in, yeah, we'll be moving back down to E0 from E2, which means that that will obliterate infinity minus three and the zero collapses. You see what I'm saying? Because we know that's where infinity minus three came from, those cardinals. But when we plus two, we're going to collapse that back to the zero, yeah? And what happens is we collapse the zero wave. And what that's happening was like reality, isn't it? You've got an infinite number of numbers. You collapse that moment of time, like, you know, quantum physics and all that business, yeah? And that creates a set of a number which is real. You know, a whole real number. The infinite state of the real number of the universe at any moment in time, which is always different. If you look around you, everything, all the plants, everything is different, right? And so the reason that's all different is because it's an infinite step. It's a step towards the next infinite, yeah? And that's what we're doing with the cardinals. We're stepping through infinities, yeah? Sorry, with the ordinals. We're stepping through infinities of time. So we can call that 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And each one is a space. We'll call that like the fractional part, if you like, yeah? Because an infinite amount of space at each step. Yeah, of time, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and at each step of time, the infinite space can be expressed as a fraction of that step. Yeah, so when we reverse the steps, we have to obviously just remind ourselves that we're reversing time. So then, for we're taking two off the original, and that's how we collapse the zero wave. And by collapsing the zero wave, we collapse it back. And as we'll see later, that's how we collapse real numbers and how consciousness works to formulate numbers, if you like. So that's the collapsing of zero, yeah, through the addition and subtraction. And what came out of that, we realized, oh look, there's a times function and there's a plus function, yeah. So the times function must be very important because that allows us to create zero squared. And zero squared is a bit of a strange concept for those people who aren't dealing with infinite mathematics. But as we've ascertained that there's this, we're talking about actually squaring the zero at the center of plus or minus zero. And when we do that, what happens is that we know we can do that because if we have a plus zero and a minus zero, and those are the things that we have, we can multiply them together. Yeah, and when we do multiply a negative concept with a positive concept, we get a negative concept. But that negative concept cannot exist in the same space, obviously, as the negative zero. It's got to exist in a new space. So what happens is we square the zero and we rotate the number line in an anti-clockwise, yes, anti-clockwise direction. That's the direction it's turning. Not in any other direction. It's turning in an anti-clockwise direction because it has to move towards the negative. And we know that negative infinity, let's say we draw a line, could be below the line with negative on one side. Let's put the positive on the other side. In that case, if we're going to look at numbers like that, then we should do the rotation in accordance. Yeah. If you wanted to place the positive on the negative the other way around, you could do that. It would be what we call inversion. And then you'd be rotating in the other direction. But because we place the numbers positive on the right and negative on the left, that means we're going to be in an anti-clockwise rotation because we're always going to rotate towards the negative on the y-axis. And that's what's created. Zero squared creates an infinity of zero squared. Yeah, we look at it like an infinity, a zero infinity at the center. At the top, we have an X and Y, we have an X-axis going across, a Y-axis going up and down, and then we have plus and minus zero on the Y, and plus and minus zero on the X, and that creates four types of zero around the zero state of zero. And actually, this is very important because this creates 2D plane, and 2D, two-dimensional mathematics can now start to emerge. And so now that we have a two-dimensional mathematics, we can look at what does the square root do. Let's have a look. So what we're really saying is here, if you extrapolate, we've got infinity times 2, Which is fair enough. So that becomes the infinity square root. If we're going to square root zero, so we're square rooting the zero at that point, and that's going to create this kind of number square around there. You see what I'm saying? That's where these square roots will exist, and these square roots will have to exist, obviously, as a function of a quadrature nature of space. That's what actually has to happen. You can't have a square root of something without a quadrature nature. Yeah. And so what we're going to look at after that, we're going to look at the square root of one and where that falls in the number space. Okay. So the square root of zero there, it forms this, we can now make a cross with a zero in the middle. We've got zeros on the edges of the cross, and there's a line that goes, across there. So it forms a rotated square. It's a rotation square. And so we know that actually squaring. Yeah. So, well, look, we can put zero squared in the corners there. Yeah. In the center, of the zero line, because zero squared is the function that rotates it. And actually there's a space there, isn't it, that just expands out into infinite number space, and there's a line that confines that space, which will be transposed into the reciprocal number space between 0 and 1 once we get to the number 1. But we're still at number 0 at the moment, so we're still good. We're still within the 0, and we haven't had to use any of that number 1 or anything like that just yet. Yeah, or have we? Well, kind of, because we've actually had to use those numbers in the ordinal space, haven't we? Yeah. So in the ordinal space, we're still there. But actually, as far as the 0 space of cardinal numbers, the infinity 2, we haven't actually had to involve that too much. But what that means is we can see the conditions still, yeah? So what we see now is that when we square root on that side, we can see that the conditions for the cardinal space will be the square root of 2, which will form square numbers and so on and so forth. But on the other side, we have something called the square root now of 3, because remember, E2 means that we're in infinity minus 3. And if you square root 3, then if you want to find the square root of 3, a square root of 3. And 3 is, when we say square root and we have 2, what we recognize that is that that's a relationship in a triangle. And so what we can do is we can actually, if we'd like to, we can separate out the two concepts a little bit, and we can place a triangle in one sector, which is like the 0 will be the 0 that's missing, with the 3, with the zeros, with the cardinal numbers now being the square root of 3, with the ordinal numbers now being the square root of 3, which is found within the triangle function. We can look at two triangles, top to bottom, for example, yeah? And those two triangles actually form a square, if you think about it, yeah? But they're slightly offset. Now, what's the importance of that is that if you think about the square root of 2 now becoming a function of the two-dimensional plane, when it expands into the cube, what we find is that the diagonal, which is the square root of 2, we also need to expand in numerical space to become the square root of 3, which is the space distance between the corners of a cube as opposed to a corner of a square. So what we're saying is at E2 now we have the infinite relationship at one point in the equation, which is to do with the square root function of 0, which collapses the function back to 0. If you like, the square root collapses things back. Well, plus and minus collapses things back, yeah, and opens it. We've got the square rooting function, which now is the thing that can form the dimensional space, yeah? And we've got the squaring function, which forms the other kind of dimensional space, which is based in pi, the circle. As the number sweeps through infinity from one infinity to the other, we get what's called pi infinity. And that pi is a particular type of infinity based on the square and has a relationship with that, whereas in the triangular infinity of the ordinal numbers is a second type of infinity that can also has a unity of pi when we place the triangle in a circle. So we're going to get more into all that, how that works with pi divided by 4, pi divided by 3, and how that functions in the time space as we move through the course. But thank you very much for your attention today, and I hope that clarifies some of the mathematics of infinity that surrounds the structure of number space. And what we've tried to do is now is embody that in a little bit more of a simple geometry so you can understand. So let's just go now with the final recap, yeah, that we have now E2, the functions, to collapse the number space back into 0. We also have the functions that can rotate and create the pi, the infinity of pi, and we have the functions that can transform a square number space into a, which is 2D, into a 3D number space from the perspective of infinity. And we do that through a time function. That'd be the next step, if you'd like. Yeah, we can step into that time. So, as a function there at E2, we have all of those those capacities, and we can define that then in two types of infinite set, one the pi and one the dimensional set, you could say, and the pi set, which forms the dimensional numbers, if you like. It's the first of the dimensionals that come out. As we rotate, we create that thing, it creates the pi. The moment you moved off that axis, you create all a tiny, tiny little bit of pi, and then the infinite pi expands from that. You don't even need to move any, just the infinite amount of distance, and you've created pi. You know what I mean? Just that infinite amount of distance around that circle, all that's pi, but you just, now you're just going to expand that ratio in, until you understand it as a circle, depending on how you go, yeah? So it's just going to expand it once you've made that motion, and it's going to come to a stop at exactly the quarter pi. So quarter pi is a particular function, so we draw that as a zero in the center with the four zeros, and we draw a circle, and we color in one of those circles at the bottom to represent the infinity of pi function. And you will see that that will transcend into the sphere once we mix that with the root functions that create the 2D to 3D. Once we get there, we've got to pi 4, which will create the spherical dimension, you could say, yeah? So therefore, we can understand that will create the whole circle, its completion, yeah? Which then elevates us then to E3, yeah? We haven't even, you know, so we've understood E2 now from the perspective of the creation of number space, and E3 is where we will move then from that into the fourth dimension.